The war is over, Jeff Merrick. The war
what
is
war?
Over.
What
and
war?
And the eggheads have won, sir.
You know, there's
the
a
eggheads
great,
have won the war.
There's a great Frank Zappa line, someone who has musically always been near and dear to my heart. And the quote goes like this, the meek shall not inherit the earth, the geek shall inherit the earth. And as it relates to hockey, the geeks have won, Greg Wyshynski. Or are we getting too far ahead of ourselves? Because here's a question I have about the about analytics right now in hockey. And ultimately, I think the right side of history is this will become more of the conversation, become more of the lexicon, more of what goes into the decision-making in hockey. My only question about the rush to analytics for a lot of teams, and I don't think Edmonton's one of these teams. I don't think Toronto is one of these teams. I do wonder about New Jersey, and I do wonder about some other teams out there. I wonder if teams will be rushing to have someone who covers or follows the analytics of hockey, for perhaps lack of a better term, just so the general manager can check a box at the end of the year. Just so that general manager's ass is covered at the end of the year when the team president says, well, do we have someone covering off the analytics of the game? Like, what goes into our decision-making process? Oh, yes, let me introduce you to our analytics department. Like, it's one thing to have the department or the people involved in it, and it's another thing to actually use those resources. It's fine and dandy to go and hire a department, but if any time, you know, let's say, you know, person X who is part of the analytics department of your hockey operations submits a, you know, a sheet at the end of the week or submits a finding or, you know, submits their work. If you look at it and throw it in the garbage, well, what's the point of having an analytics department in the first place then? That's my only question. Will general managers just go out and hire someone just so at the end of the year you can check a box? Yes, we have this covered off.
That's the very cynical view that this has been met with by some people, which is that it's simply flavor of the week. It's trying to hop on the train. It's trying to show that they are forward-thinking as organizations, but at the end of the day, maybe discounting the information that's given to them. I mean, in the Devils' case, you're right. Every inkling I've gotten from people around that situation are telling me that it's the ownership's choice to bring on an analytics guy, that Lamoriello will listen. But honestly, dude, how much is he going to take into account? Haven't been on that job since 1987 with three pretty Stanley Cup rings on his chubby Italian fingers. I think it the embrace of analytics is an interesting thing because we've been through this before. We've talked about how the most successful teams in this league are the ones that do pay attention to puck possession, are the ones that do pay attention to analytics. The ones that seem to be adopting that take are certainly ones that need a different direction. I mean, the Edmonton Oilers need to rethink this thing a little bit. The Toronto Maple Leafs faced such huge backlash for being Neanderthalic in their thinking that they had to reconsider things. So it'll be interesting to see where the middle ground is. We've got teams that are really successful that have done this. We've got teams that are desperate that have done this. What about the middle of the pack? Are they on the analytics train too, or are they on the wait and see kind of train? Or are they doing it but just not flaunting it?
Like, I think eventually every team is going to catch on to how this can actually help you, how this is actually going to become commonplace. And one of the things that I equate it to is, and a lot of people will blame one person specifically for ruining it for everybody. You know who that person is and what I'm talking about here? Workouts and Tim Hunter. Tim Hunter became one of the first guys to show up in training camp in amazing shape. Like, when Tim Hunter showed up in camp, every guy on the team was like, oh, damn it. Like, I went fishing this summer. Like, I played bocce ball this summer. Look at Tim Hunter comes to camp, and he doesn't have a boiler on him. He's not winded after doing laps. Holy smokes, this sucks. And now everyone sort of rises with the tide to the point where everybody shows up in training camp in amazing shape. Like, it is very seldom you see fatigue in a game because these guys are such finely trained, very athletic, you know, in great shape, you know, fantastic athletes right now. But everybody's at that. So that now becomes a level that everybody is at in the NHL. I do wonder, as it relates to the information that analytics shares with teams, if everybody has their guy or gal or a group or army of people following these analytics, don't the ships just rise with that tide? Like,
yeah,
at what point does it cease to be an advantage if everybody's doing it? Don't get me wrong. I think the right side of history is everybody will do it. And listen, this is a copycat league, and everybody will, and probably everybody should, because the game is being rethought right now. But at a certain point, don't you just say, hey, it's a wash. You know, this team's got Kyle Dubas, this team has Tyler Dello. It's a wash.
Well, no, then the interesting thing becomes the next evolution of this, which is that now that you've got people in place that, well, I'll tell you what it is. It's data. It comes down to how good your numbers are. Because right now, as fans and as people that follow this stuff like Dello did on his own blog, the best and only available information that we have is what is gleaned from the National Hockey League's reporting. And that reporting frequently
Good
can
point.
Be skewed,
yes.
It can be flawed, it can have home ice biases. We've seen it throughout. Mm-hmm. Every box score you look at's got it, right?
Yep.
So now the next evolution of analytics is going to be, what does the league do and what do these teams do to better increase the validity and accuracy of its data? So that's why this player tracking stuff's getting such attention during the summer, along with the analytics stuff, because it's the next evolution. It's putting cameras around the ice, tracking players, getting real-time numbers on puck possession versus trying to extrapolate it from, you know, shots attempted. So I think the next evolution is, okay, you got Dello. He's a big brain. He knows how to use these numbers. He knows what they mean, all that jive. How good are the numbers that he's working with? And that's where the real, that's where the point of delineation could be. If the NHL goes with something homogenous in trying to introduce player tracking to all 30 teams, and that's the real debate. Like John Collins right now is trying to figure out, do we go with one company? Do we go with another company? Do we go with multiple companies? If the NHL does one thing and teams are willing to pay for something that's maybe a little bit more forward-thinking, technologically advanced, more accurate, then there will be some advantages for teams if they keep this stuff in-house versus kind of going by the NHL's number. So that to me is the next evolution of this stuff.
Let me ask you a question, and you're a lot closer to John Collins than I am. Do you think that there may be a fear? And maybe you could say, well, it's a double-edged sword. It can work both ways, considering, you know, the nature of hockey players. But do you think there is a fear within the NHL to get too specific with a lot of these numbers for one very specific point, and that's salary arbitration? Because armed with more numbers, agents can kill you. But then on the flip side, like, this is not going to be anything that we see under this CBA. But in future CBAs, I mean, the Players Association, as long as every team has their own sport, you know, their analytics department, you know, the Players Association can make a case, well, hang on, everybody's using these numbers. This is part of the conversation. This is part of what goes into a hockey player, what goes into a hockey team. Shouldn't we be allowed to use these numbers when it comes time to pay us?
Absolutely.
I think that becomes a fight, and is the NHL weary of that?
I think it's going to be a fight anyway, though. I don't think anything the NHL does to officially endorse numbers or not endorse numbers is going to matter, because the information's out there. It's readily available to agents. I'm sorry. If you're Benoit Pouliot's agent and you walk into a room and you don't know what his possession stats are, I mean, just fire yourself. I mean, there are certain guys now in this league that are going to be able to use metrics like Corsi and Fenwick as their calling card, as their argument that, yes,
well,
my goals are not
although,
where they
hang
should
on.
Be. No, my points are aren't where they should be. But look at the team when I'm on the ice. Look at the team when I'm off the ice. I clearly make a better this situation. I don't know if that – I mean, it all depends on what they're working with arbitration-wise, whether that will be covered in the scope of the rulings.
Just so we're on the same page, people, they can't use the numbers now, right? They can't use Corsi. No, they cannot. There's a very specific and set guideline for what you can bring up in an arbitration case. Absolutely. That's why I bring it up. Like, at what point is the NHL say, okay, fine, now as an agent you can bring this up in arbitration? Because as of right now, I wish you can't. They're very set. Finite amount of things you can bring up in arbitration.
Well, it's a set finite amount of things that you can do as far as player comparison. You can make any case you want in that room as far as the player's value to the team. In fact, there's often intangible cases made on both sides. But you're right in the sense that from a player comparison standpoint, this guy makes X amount of dollars, my guy makes X amount of dollars, here's his Corsi. You're right. They can't do that.
But it
can be part of the larger picture that they paint inside that room.
Yes, in vague terms. But when you want to get the specifics, hey, Shea Weber has this many points. My client has this many points. This is what Shea Weber makes. This is what my client wants.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting.
You can feel, right? Like, you can feel the tug of being brought into the new way of looking at the game. And then you wonder if something like Hits becomes
By the way, the agents can feel the rub and a tug in that room in Vegas they'll be spending a weekend in after they sign off that contract and get their guy that Corsi money. No,
I love
but the wind is blowing.
I love where the arbitrator's office is, right near the airport. Why? Oh, no reason. you can feel it sort of being, you know, the NHL being moved into this direction, and then you wonder if things like hits, for example, as we relook at the game, and where once upon a time, you know, hit count was a big deal, and we said, you know, if you look at a game one specific way, you're a big, rough, tough team. Look at all the hits you have. Look at this player. He's got, you know, 500 hits this year. Oh, my God, he's a killer. You know, the flip side of that could be, depending on your perspective, well, of course he's hitting because he doesn't have the puck. And we value players right. that have the puck, not players that don't have the puck. And those are the guys it hits. And that's why Nick Lidstrom would win Norris Trophy after Norris Trophy and barely hit double digits on hits every year.
By the way, I love Ovechkin for a number of reasons, but the interview we put on Puck Daddy yesterday, it's wide
awesome.
Ranging.
Plus
it's
minus?
It's an awesome interview.
It's awesome.
But
it's
the
really
plus
good.
Minus section is it's so great. Good. He throws Jeff Schultz under the bus as the example of plus minus being a bullshit stat. And it's like, there's this, you could hear the simultaneous chubby happening in the DC area from all the Capitals fans that are like, wow, he went there. He tore down Jeff Schultz to make the point about plus minus. Here's a few of the Finn wants to know, are you guys planning on having Dello on when he gets back from Europe? Absolutely. We're going to have Tyler on. We hope that we can get him on and he could be candid and he can talk a little bit. I mean, if Kyle Dubas can join us and talk candidly and about a lot of stuff, we assume Tyler would be able to too. And I'll say this to him when we talk to him. I mean, whether it's on the air or off the air or whatever, I'm extraordinarily happy for him. I know this has been in the works for a long time between him and the Oilers to try to figure out if there was a fit. The idea of a fan going to work for his team and actually coming on board in like player personnel is like every – listen, there are certain kids in the world that dream about scoring the game-winning goal for their team. And then there are other kids in the world, and I'm one of them, that dream about going into the front office and constructing that championship team. I would rather be Dean Lombardi than Anže Kopitar in life, personally. But that's neither here nor there. I don't know where Tyler's head is. I'm sure it's in both places because he's a pretty good hockey player, too. I'm happy for him. I think it's an awesome moment for him. I think it's an awesome thing to be at the forefront of the analytics movement, and I'm really excited to see what impact he can make. I'm happy that he is going to be reporting directly to Dallas Eakins. That's a very good thing because I'm sure that there are still some minds that need to be convinced about analytics, and it's good to have – it's good – the only way this thing's ever going to work is if you have advocates on your side. You know, Sonny Mehta going to the Devils is great. If one of the owners is his guy, his voice will be heard. If the coach and, say, Scott Housen are Tyler's guys, his voice will be heard. There is one thing that bothers me. I know why it has to happen. We've all been in this place before. I've often remarked that this whole analytics thing does remind me of when bloggers started getting hired by the mainstream. And in some cases, if you've talked a lot of shit in your life about certain publications or certain individuals, sometimes you have to walk it back when you get hired by those publications or have to work with those individuals. I get that. I've had to deal with some of that myself, dealing with a certain bald gentleman who stands between the benches and may say a thing or two during games. I've had to deal with that too. It does bother the shit out of me that Dello had to get rid of his archives. He had to shut down his blog. And we know why he had to do it. It's because 90% of the things he'd write were making the Oilers look like fools. But boy, does it bother me he had to scrub his blog.
Let me throw it the other way, and I don't know that he had to. I don't know
or
if
chose
he,
to.
I don't know if he chose to. That's a question that I can't answer. But doesn't it speak well to the Oilers that they would hire someone who's done that? Like, normally the reaction is you get your backup, you dig your heels in, and over my dead body is this guy coming into our house after treating our organization like this, after saying these things, although they may have been true. We don't want this guy in here. Like, isn't that give you more respect for the Oilers organization? That they would say, you know what? He said some things that were uncomfortable for our organization. Even though those things were true, we weren't a big fan of him writing the way that he did about them. But still, what he said wasn't off the mark. What he said wasn't slanderous. And we think he can help us. Like, isn't that, like, to bring it into, to bring it, hang on, to bring it into wrestling terms, okay?
Yes, uh-huh.
There is, it is next to, if not completely impossible, to burn a bridge with Vince McMahon. If he thinks you can make him money, he will hire you, regardless of what you have done, and that includes testifying against him at steroid trials.
Right. Now,
you know,
he
which
may,
would have seen him gone to jail.
He may
Didn't
hire
speak
you.
Well of the Oilers?
He may hire you and force you to wear polka dots and dance around the ring with a woman named Sapphire.
That's very true. That's a good point. That's a good point.
No, but the cynical take on that is that they're silencing a critic.
No, I don't
which is
that
what
for
a lot of
public.
Hey, and no, the example
that.
I keep drawing is when the Bleacher Report hired five of their most harshest critics to be featured writers. Guess what happened? A lot of people stopped talking shit on the Bleacher Report because they silenced the five more most prominent voices.
Hang on. Do you think for a second that if the Oilers come out of the gate 5-15, that no one's going to talk smack about the Oilers and how awful they are because all of a sudden Tyler's working for them now?
No. But I think that's part of it. You have to remember what's happening in Edmonton media right now. In Edmonton media right now, there's been a disenfranchisement of the mainstream guys in some cases because fans aren't buying what they're selling all the time anymore. Low Tide has a radio show, and he's, you know, which is amazing and awesome. Dello's got a voice. The criticism of this team has certainly been heard by the franchise itself, but it's also been heard by the fans that I think are grokking more the alternative media and guys like Dello than they are the Edmonton Sun. And a guy like Dan Tenser becomes a laughingstock because they see him as being an extension of the PR department. So if you – listen, I'm not saying it's the reason Tyler got hired. Tyler got hired because he's brilliant with numbers and because he's one of the few guys that can take the numbers, make sense of them, and then look like a real smart guy when what he predicts comes to fruition. I think there is some tangential benefit to silencing your harshest critic and bringing him on board and having him drink the Kool-Aid and having him on the payroll and then also getting rid of all of the stuff he talked shit about
the head of the
franchise.
But the thing is, I could understand that if they had hired Tyler Dello not to do analytics but had brought Tyler Dello in, you know, just to sit in on various hockey meetings but not bring up things like Corsi and Fenwick. Like, he was brought in for a very specific reason to help this team equal more points in the standings.
But hold on. But
if he was just hired by the Oilers to have some McJob and not do anything, hey, kids, stick a broom in your ass on the way out and sweep up when everybody leaves, that's one thing. But he was brought in to do a very, very specific job.
He didn't get a McJob, and you could see in the moves that the Oilers made this summer that they're paying more attention to these things, or else they would have never signed Fane, and they would have never signed
Pouliot.
Exactly. So I don't think it's a dog and pony show. I don't think that it's some sort of faux hiring, but I do think that there is some benefit to having, you know, one of your harshest critics singing Kumbaya with you.
I don't think that it's primary. I think that it's that's a secondary benefit.
Totally.
That's my only argument. And you're worried about bad press. I don't think they go into this saying, hey man, here's a chance we can finally shut down that blog.
Every move you make has some level of public relations to it. And they get a brilliant guy in there who's going to make a difference. He's going to bring a new perspective to that room, and hopefully he has a voice when it comes to player personnel decisions, because I think he should. But at the same time, you also silence your harshest critic, and you also make a very public statement that we are, even though we've been in the shit for you for years, Oilers fans, we are now moving forward.
As they say
in Canada.
The only reason I would take exception with that is they've had opportunities to hire him before. I mean, Dallas Eakins has been quite open about the presentation that Tyler made last year, and Edmonton had a chance to hire him then. Why didn't they? Like, if they're just concerned with silencing a critic, why didn't they hire him a year ago?
We kind of know why. He's Tyler. I mean, listen, let's be honest here. Like, I love Dello. You love Dello. The things that were written about Tyler Dello when he got hired by some people like Mark Spector, for example, were written from a perspective of this guy is the most titanic jerk in the history of social media. And whether he is or isn't that guy, there is that perception. I'm sure there are people in the organization that didn't want any part of him.
If that's true, I haven't heard it.
All right.
Because I'm just trying to think of like who I've heard, you know, on or off the record. And I can't think of one.
People that he's called
really
just gigantic dumbasses.
Dude. Yeah, Steve Tambolini.
Tambolini's
gone. That was the target of most of his venom, and Steve Tambolini's gone.
No, that was the target.
Really is. Like, really is. When the story is written, it goes like this: blogger criticizes general manager. General manager gets fired. Blogger gets hired. it really is such a unique sports story.
Right, after Blogger finds nepotism running rampant within the Department of Player Safety, head of the Department of Player Safety is kicked to the side in favor of someone else. What's great about Tyler.
That's part of it. Can you imagine? It's an awesome story.
A guy who unseated Colin Campbell, like the apple of the commissioner's eye, is now working for a National Hockey League team. That just goes to show you, man, no matter how many bridges you think you've torched, no matter how many toes you think you've stepped on, it is a testament to being the person you are and a testament to not bending to the whim and not playing the game, because at the end of the day, quality gets rewarded.
Yeah. You know what the one of the sad things about all this is? And you touched on it with his blog going away. Not that there aren't other people online that you can follow this type of conversation about hockey. But his blog was a great resource for looking at the game in a very specific way. It was entertaining, and it was well written, and it was thoughtful. And the video work was outstanding. That's gone now, I think. I don't know because that information now becomes property of the Edmonton Oilers. Like, Tyler's brain now is property of Rexall. Really? I mean, that's where it is right now. So I think that even if Tyler wanted to put that back up there, probably wouldn't be the smartest idea, since those are his thoughts, that's his brain, that's where he's coming from. That could be seen as competitive disadvantage if that remained public.
Yeah. And Benjamin Weiss makes the point, isn't it possible the blog stuff was also scrubbed in order to hide some of his work from competitors? That's quite possible, too, is that now they feel like they have this guy, and everything that comes out of his brain is proprietary. So why allow his thoughts, theories, theorems to be public record for other teams to just poach from his blog?
Hey, what do you think about this? I've been thinking a lot about this is, as it's been called, the summer of analytics. I've even referenced it on Twitter. I think we've all sort of called that this. Like, the summer of love was, you know, Max Asger's farm. This is the summer of analytics 2014. There are still a lot of people that have no use for this type of information, don't want to follow the game like this, don't want this to be part of their conversation. And to me, that's fine. I don't think negatively about these people. I don't think poorly. I don't think as if analytics people somehow have a superior perspective on enjoying the game.
I completely agree with you. Sorry. But there's one exception. People like Steve Simmons, who is an acquaintance. We get along fine on the road, everything else. I've never had a real issue with him. But when they flaunt their ignorance about analytics and then take on the other side and wield that ignorance like a sword in this battle, it's stupid. Like, if you can't recognize the value of the work, recognize the value of the stats, then you're just being a troll and you're being an idiot. And I've said to Steve before, I'm like, you come off – Your value as a pundit that's been in this game for decades and having something to offer is diminished mightily when you sit back and play this Luddite bullshit game. So, I mean, that's the exception. I will never hold it against anybody if they don't want to drink the Kool-Aid on analytics quite yet. But don't just hit the other side with your nonsense as far as it having no value, because everyone knows it has value.
Yeah, that's true. I also don't like when analytics people gang up on people that choose not to be part of that conversation. That bugs me equally. Yeah. But the way that I've been able to sort of distill it in my mind right now is, if you look at hockey as if it is a riddle to be solved, then analytics is great for you. It's fantastic. Like, if you watch the game and you say to yourself, this is a puzzle, this is a riddle, I need to solve what is happening and why it's happening and what this means for what will happen in subsequent games. If you look at the game as if it's a riddle, analytics are great for you, and you'll naturally be attracted to them. But if you look at it as just a reality to be enjoyed, and this comes from a very pretentious, I know, but I'm a philosophy minor, so indulge me, from Soren Kierkegaard, who once said, when talking about life, the mystery of life is not a problem to be solved, but a reality to be enjoyed. If you look at hockey just as a sport to be enjoyed, as a thing which is part of our life and our sort of collective sports consciousness, then don't worry about analytics. Don't get caught up in it. Don't be anxiety-filled about analytics. But if you look at the game as a riddle, then analytics are fine. And I think both perspectives have value. If you just want to enjoy a hockey game, I think you should be able to do so and not be ganged up on people on Twitter. If you look at it as a riddle, though, you know what? Let people who want to unfold, let people who want to make this, you know, hockey Rubik's Cube, solve this hockey Rubik's Cube, let them do that and don't belittle them. But let's not have these two sides completely at each other's throats because you're comparing chalk and cheese. You really are.
Yeah.
One sees it as a riddle. Other sees it as a reality to be enjoyed. That's kind of where I'm at with the two different camps right now.
One last thing on analytics, because I think it's an interesting point from Mark Caravallo. Wouldn't it work the other way as well, where teams can say a certain guy has terrible possession numbers in arbitration? So possession... not always the benefit it could be for players in those talks. And that's a legitimate point. I think teams could use it too. But I do think you'd probably see possession numbers and things of that wielded more by agents, wielded more by players that need to make an argument because they don't have the glamour stats to back up their salary demand. Wouldn't you agree?
Yep, I think that's true.
The deeper you dip into the bag of stats... it's probably because you don't have a case based on goals, assists, points, and the metrics that would be comparable to other players. So I think it's still to a player's advantage that that stuff be admissible in these cases versus a team. But like Merrick said, they'd have to tweak the format a little bit. All right, when we come back from the intro, we're going to talk about improv. Oh, yeah. And then about 10 minutes after that, the moment you've all been waiting for, Jeff Merrick gets to see firsthand – the rebirth of Game Show Friday.
Hang on.
With that,
is this like Spinal Tap? Spinal Tap Mark II, when Nigel leaves the band and they discover they're going to go in a new direction, it becomes Jazz Odyssey. Is that what this is going
to
become now?
I prefer to think of it as me hyping something that winds up being a Stonehenge statue that is almost crushed by a midget.
No one knew that, who they were or what they were doing.
Oh, how they dance, the little people of Stonehenge.
Stonehenge.
All right. With that, let's start the show proper, shall we?
It's the podcast.
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet.
You know, there's dumb and then there's hockey dumb. Well, this is hockey dumb, folks.
And Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
I'm just happy you got into Bruce Boudreau's pants yesterday.
Debate hockey.
Weird things happen. The Carolina Hurricanes won the Stanley Cup.
Pop culture.
You ever been to the bar in Boston where they have the pornographic claw machine?
No.
And more hockey.
I just hate anything below the waist. I just can't stand it.
Merrick versus Wyshynski.
Woo! Benny Hill theme.
Wow.
Hey, yeah. Joe Pack mentions, a distinction has to be made between value of a team using analytics and the media using numbers to tell stories. On that second part, it's something
true.
I wanted to bring up about John Collins before that I forgot. Collins sees analytics, and I've talked to him about this, he sees analytics as another entry point for fans to follow the National Hockey League. The NHL's big marketing guy, Mr. Put the Games Outdoors, sees analytics as another way to tell that story. So I think that's why the league is going to be going down this road.
And
trying to make the data good, and the moment that the wave crests on analytics is when you have a drop down menu for it on NHL.com, and I don't know when that's coming, but it'd be great if it did happen because that's where we.
I think
they are giving money away to Extra Skater right now by allowing them to carry the analytics ball. There's no way NHL.com shouldn't have that information on its own website.
Don't know why they don't, the NHL, and maybe they do, they have this in progress. I don't know why they don't have an apology to those that do it. They don't have their own version of Extra Skater and their own version of Cap Geek. They're handing it, to your point, they're handing it away. And hang on, to Joe Pack's point, too, about the media using it to tell stories, I'll be very curious. We have a 3-day seminar coming up with the NHL in September. Curious to see if this topic is discussed at all during our seminar. And I've talked to our executive producer at Sportsnet for next season and a couple of other producers as well about how we're going to make this part of the broadcast. And to Joe Pack's point, he's bang on, how do we turn these numbers into stories? Because, Greg, as you well know, and anyone listening well knows, there is nothing more boring than a board full of numbers and terms that nobody can understand because they're looking at it for the first time. The trick is, how do you? It's great. It's great for a blog. It's great for a book. It's great for a magazine. It's great for Twitter, obviously. The challenge is, how do you take that and turn it into something on television, knowing full well that intermissions have a very finite amount of time you can deal with them.
Yeah, there's a reason I only watch CNBC. Why I only watch CNBC when Shark Tank is on? It's because during the day they talk about stocks. And I don't know stocks. Exactly. It's all Greek to me. Oh, what's that? They hit their thing and they made a thing and now there's an IPO.
And then there's
okay.
That, yeah.
It's exciting. Yeah. We wanted to talk a little bit about improv before we get to Game Show Friday. And by improv, we don't mean, of course, comedy improv, which I stopped going to years ago when it became apparent that every time they asked for a profession, someone would scream out, gynecologist! Because what's funnier than a gynecologist? We're talking about improv on the ice and players that are still great at improvisation.
I think one of the last times we were on, I talked about my love of Gilbert Gottfried's new podcast, the Amazing Colossal podcast. And the most recent one with Penn Jillette of Penn & Teller fame, ladies and gentlemen, may be the best one and is one of the funniest podcasts I have ever heard. Big fan of Penn Jillette, Penn & Teller. Was a big fan of their show Bullshit, which I think everybody
so good.
Should have. It's fantastic. Missed the boat on a couple of them, but by and large, absolutely nailed it. The Aristocrats, which Penn Jillette and Paul Provenzano put together, I still think is brilliant. And really, in the podcast, Penn Jillette talks a lot about the nature of comedic improv, and we hear a lot about musical improv. And you look at a lot of the Charlie Parkers and the John Coltranes of the world, specifically because it normally relates to jazz. And you can bring that over to the world of comedy through a joke like the Aristocrats joke, which has a very specific structure, has an opening, it has a conclusion, and then within that frame is the play, which is just make up how you get to the end, and that is the comedian's improvisation. So it got me to thinking as I'm listening to this, are there any great improvisers left in hockey? Because once upon a time, when the game wasn't as structured as it was now, there were plenty of people that improvised. Now, there were guys that did it at the ultra elite level, and that to me would be Mario Lemieux, who in my mind is the most talented hockey player I ever saw, and probably from a skill set point of view is the most talented hockey player in the history of the game. And he did things improvisationally that I don't think I've ever seen hockey players do. A sort of a second tier would even be someone like Bill Derlego, who I still don't think gets enough credit for being a great improvising hockey player with a high skill set who, for whatever reasons, be they work ethic or otherwise, found himself on the outside of the game. God, was Bill Derlego so good. Like, honestly, he was so freaking fantastic. Skill set was off the charts. But I got to be thinking, like, are there any great improvisers, Wish, that are left in the game? Guys that don't just follow the get the puck deep, put the puck in a safe area. If you're in a tricky spot, take the safe option. Are there guys in the game right now that don't take the tricky, that don't take the easy option, but take the improvisational option and try to create something out of nothing?
And in our conversation about this, Merrick and I hit on something, which is that the simple answer to this question at times could be who has the biggest bag of tricks. But it's not always about that because it's whether you utilize them. You know, Peter Forsberg is a great example. Early in his career, I think Forsberg was really a magician. And then as injuries set in, as age set in, he became a much more straightforward player. Jágr is another example of a guy who I think has become a very straightforward player. I mean, basically, he's like a power forward in the NBA right now. He just backs people in.
Stick out your ass.
Stick out your ass and back it in. The two biggest examples, the two names that have been mentioned the most, the responses to our question of the day, which is who is the best improviser on the ice, as Chris Dierickson writes in, you mean other than Pavel Datsyuk? And then he says two that are interesting because I didn't take the question this way, but you could certainly say this about these players. Years ago, I would have said Brodeur. Less years ago, I'd have said Timmy Thomas. Now, Mm-hmm. Thomas, to me, is the answer from the goalie side. I mean, he follows in the spirit of Dominik Hasek, as guys that you can throw anything at, and he will make the save by any means necessary. Less
ball
about technique.
Goalie.
Yeah,
ball
hockey goalie. Less about technique than it is about just simply trying to stop the puck by any cost. If he had technique, he would have stopped that shot in the Stanley Cup final that one year, as Luongo pointed out, that one shot he missed. But Thomas is a great example. I would say another great example to that spirit of sort of ball hockey and using your heart instead of your head sometimes is Patrick Kane. Patrick Kane might be the best improviser in the NHL right now as far as premier offensive players because of the multitude of ways he can attack the net, but also because he's a very sneakily good passer too. And I think that great improvisers are also great at knowing when you don't have the shot. A great improviser is not some guy who pumps pucks into the stomach of a defenseman as they're lying in front of them on the ice. A great improviser either knows how to dance around that guy or make a play using one of his teammates, and I think Patrick Kane's extraordinarily good at that.
See, Gretzky in this conversation has to be part of it because he had what few other players, no one really had, what they call the two-second advantage, in that Wayne could see plays developing 2 seconds before they did. Everybody was playing checkers and he was playing chess. That's the way Gretzky was. Mm-hmm. But in the game now, when you look at how structured it is and how everybody has a very specific responsibility, the other guy that comes to mind, and we talked about him last year during the Olympics, as if he was a rover, and that's Drew Doughty. Mm. Drew Doughty does not follow the formula for what a defenseman should either look like in 2014 or play like. He really is someone that sort of embodies, I think, that embodies the spirit of improvisation. You can only do that though once you have the basics. Once you have the basics, you just go. It's like the old joke from Best in Show. They don't do, you know, the begging and the rolling over and all those tricks. You just assume the dogs already know that, and then we just move on to the more difficult categories later on.
But to speak to your point then how do you assess PK Subban as a improviser? Because
I think he's excellent.
But the argument's always been that he does some of that stuff he does to cover up defensive deficiencies. Same thing with Erik Karlsson. In both cases, they're doing all of these things because they don't have that solid foundation like Doughty does.
I don't know about that. I mean, I still think Erik Karlsson knows how to pass a puck. I still think Erik Karlsson knows how to shade someone off.
That remains to be seen, by the way. Erik Karlsson.
I think he knows how to angle a player.
All right, fair enough. There is a difference between want and ability.
Right, it's okay.
Right. Yeah.
Like, you know these things.
Right.
But the thing about PK Subban is, there are just so many things that you look at and you say, like, whether it's like, you know, and again, he gets heat from it because it's not part of the code and you shouldn't do that. But even something simple as dropping down when you're going to get crushed, mm-hmm. which, oh, you should never do that because it puts the person who's going to hit you in a vulnerable position. Meanwhile, that person's steaming into you to throw you into the season ticket holder's laps. Mm-hmm. There's plenty of moments during PK Subban's game where you say to yourself, that's just freestyled on the spot.
Right.
That is just complete, you know, hammer hits knee and knee reacts and leg reacts rather. To me, it's complete improvisation.
Guys that could improv more and don't, and I'm not trying to make this into a Russian problem, but Malkin and Ovechkin both could use a little bit of improv classes. We need to get them into the Upright Citizens Brigade pronto so they can improv a little bit more. With the
it's
pros.
Funny because one of the great improvisers of the game was a Russian. That's Igor Larionov.
Exactly. That's why I'm not. Hey, Kovalchuk was great at improvising. Kovalchuk could beat you 17 different ways. Same thing with Kovalev, you know.
Oh, geez. On 100%.
On the right night.
You know who's one of the great improvisers, too, in junior hockey, and the Islanders took a flyer on him because, oh, he can't play a team game. He can't play a strike. And that's Josh Hosang.
Yeah.
Josh Hosang is a very spontaneous, freestyling, This is a jazz solo in a silent way, Miles Davis kind of player. He really is.
And to bring it back to the debate about whether we're talking about players that simply don't have structure versus players that are able to improvise with structure, Adam Schwartz brings up Dustin Byfuglien's name. Now, where do you slot him on the improv list?
I don't know that I've ever accused him of being an improvisational player.
No, I think he's improvisational because he doesn't have the structure to be a machine-like conservative player within a system. I think sometimes he has to freelance because he just doesn't have that especially on D, man. He just doesn't have the same. You bring up a guy like Doughty, and you're completely right. That's a guy who is responsible on his own end and is mm-hmm. able to get creative and really inventive sometimes with breakouts and with his play in the offensive zone. But Bufflin, to me, is in that same league as of guys that if you think he's improvisational, it's because he done effed up something.
He's improvising out of necessity?
Yeah, he's been improvising out of – Mike Green. Mike Green, amazingly improvisational player. That's because he had to skate his ass back to cover mistakes.
As you hear the coach on the bench saying, just go to the effing front of the net. Just go to the front of the net. Stop chasing.
Yeah. There you go. All right, listen. It was a good discussion. If you want to chime in on the improvisational stuff, puckdaddyblog@yahoo.com and keep this conversation going on Twitter as well. Brent, do we have our game mm-hmm. show Friday contestant on
the
line?
We do.
She is standing by.
She is standing by. Why, whoever could you mean?
Oh, now it is time. On these parts.
Now it is time for a Friday favorite.
It's game show Friday.
Joining us down the line is a favorite of fans of this show, a Game Show Friday veteran, Alexis O'Banion. Oh, is it O'Banion? Do I do it right?
Hello?
Lexi? Can you hear us? Merrick, speak.
Yeah, we had this problem when I tried to get on earlier, too. Don't worry about it, Lexi.
Oh, I can hear Jeff.
You can't hear Greg? This is awesome because Greg's doing game show.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's try to remedy that.
While they figure out how I can hear Greg, can I yell at you for breaking Game Show Friday?
I didn't break it.
What is your deal? You're trying to kill it. You're trying to steal Christmas from the civilians.
Lexi, I'm not trying to steal
Christmas.
You are.
You're trying to steal Christmas. She's
completely
right.
Opinion was split right down the middle, right? When I said, hey, maybe we should think about calling it a day on game show, there were as many, hey, good mm-hmm. for you, Merrick, as to who do you think you are, Merrick? So
yeah, ooh. I'm in the revolution sort of camp against you for trying to get rid of it. It's my
can you hear,
my
Lexi, can you hear me yet or no?
I think that means no, yeah. Well, we're still trying to get Lexi to actually hear Greg. So in the meantime, why don't you just tell me the questions, Greg, and then I'll ask Lexi. Or let me know what the new format is. This will be even greater. This, by the way, underscores my point about Game Show Friday. Greg and I were having a conversation about analytics and freestyle and hockey.
It's not Game Show Friday's fault this is happening.
This is Game Show Friday's fault.
I can hear Greg now.
Oh, now you can hear Greg.
Listen, I agree with those who were in Camp Merrick on this one that certain editions of Game Show Friday may have been a little difficult to listen to, which is why we've changed the format and made it more user-friendly. Not any easier necessarily. There's still pitfalls, but made it a more vibrant and exciting format than simply having somebody on the phone, cocking a gun to the side of their head because they're on their eighth question about the 1984 Minnesota North Stars. So, you know, I understand the flaws in the game, and that's why we've tried to remedy it. Okay, listen.
But
Lexi,
based on the sort of the premise that if you're tanking Game Show Friday, then Game Show Friday isn't good.
Well, I mean, I think the premise, especially for Merrick, is if the radio show is good and then the last 15 minutes are terrible, then maybe the thing that is happening in those last 15 minutes is terrible. Am I right, Merrick? Was that kind of where you went with it?
You pretty much bang on. I mean, the show kind of a couple of times sort of went right over the cliff, but, you know.
All right, Lexi, the new format of game.
It doesn't happen every time, but whatever.
It doesn't. No, there have been some.
You know
some
what? I'll tell you what, if it weren't for Game Show Friday, we never would have met Lexi and never would have met one of our other favorite people, Matt Riegler, if it weren't for Game Show Friday. So for
precisely.
That, good for you, Game Show. Good for you, Game
There
Show.
Have been some great Game Show Friday memories made, and then there have been other times where people who appear to be the most eloquent, loquacious people we've ever have talked to get to about question six and then become monosyllabic amoeba. I mean, it's as if every bit of knowledge is dripped out of their brain during the show. All right. The new format of Game Show Friday, we did it once in June when Merrick wasn't here. It was such a rousing success that I'm fully confident that we've cracked the code and this is going to be what it is going forward. But, Lexi, The new format is, of course, five questions. We demand that you get three out of five to get this right. Okay. So it's five questions, but the great thing about it, the reason why it's such an amazingly great format, is that each of the five questions has three different categories within them. So you'll have three different categories to pick for each question, and then we go from there, right?
So it's like Jeopardy.
Well, it's more like me ripping off Doug Loves Movies, but it is also like Jeopardy as well. But basically, you pick the question five times. And then if you get three out of five, that's great. If you get three in a row, the game is over. You win. If you get three out of five, the game is over. If you get two out of five, well, then you've lost.
Right.
You follow? All right.
Yes. I'm going to tank, and I'm going to make it look good so that everybody else will be comfortable with losing in the future.
So, well, that's very noble of you. Very sacrificial of you. So, essentially, folks, if you're following along at home right now, Greg's remedy to the problem is make the game more confusing.
Well, exactly, and I take my cue.
It was perfectly understandable.
I take my cue from the National Hockey League standings. Lexi, your categories for question number one are celebrating a birthday, which, as the title of the category, you could tell, means someone who is celebrating a birthday either today or tomorrow within the vicinity of the publication of this podcast. The 2014 New York Rangers. And Patrick Kane is loaded, which are questions about Patrick Kane's contract history. So celebrating a birthday, the 2014 New York Rangers, where Patrick Kane is loaded.
Let's do the 2014 Rangers question.
All right. Here we go. This young Rangers player led the team in plus-minus with a +14 in the regular season, but was a -2 in 15 playoff games for them. Name this Ranger.
Yeah, it was the young guy. And his name is escaping me.
Uh-oh. Name a Ranger.
Merrick.
2014 Merrick. Rangers, young kid. Really good in the regular season, not so good in the postseason. I don't know. That's their whole team, so pick one.
Go ahead, name a Ranger. Any Ranger.
No Rangers are coming to mind.
All right. We will call that one a wrong answer. The answer we're looking for was Chris Kreider. Chris Kreider. +14 in the regular season.
Didn't know that.
-2 in 15 playoff games. That's okay. You've got other chances. Round two.
Round two.
Your choices are ECHL team names. The 1994 New York Rangers and Pittsburgh Penguins defensemen.
Oh, let me guess
okay,
what Lexi goes
that.
With.
Pittsburgh Penguins defensemen?
What a shock.
All right. It is unfortunately not a multiple choice question, but let's see if you can get it.
Okay.
Paul Coffey is the all-time leader for the Penguins with 440 points as a Penguin for defensemen.
Right.
Ronald Stackhouse is second with 343 points as a defenseman for the Penguins. This current National Hockey League coach is third in all-time points for Penguins defensemen with 323 points playing with the Penguins from 1978 to 1984. Can you name this coach, this current National Hockey League coach? You know this one, Merrick?
Yeah, he won a Norris Trophy as well one year. After getting traded from Toronto. Oops.
Oh.
Sorry.
Hints are hints.
Okay. I love hints how you give hidden. Me these hints that don't help me. Like, oh, his name rhymes with blah, blah, blah.
No. Where was he traded again, Merrick?
To Pittsburgh from Toronto. I think Pat Boutette went the other way.
He was traded from Toronto?
Yeah, from Toronto to Pittsburgh.
This is interesting information you've given our guest.
Yeah, no problem.
Thank
from
you.
Toronto
yeah.
to the Penguins.
He's a current NHL coach, so he had to have been in his 30s in the 80s, so that was about 30 years ago. He's probably in his 50s or 60s.
Oh, no, he was traded for Dave Burrows. He was traded with George Ferguson to Pittsburgh for Dave Burrows.
From the Toronto Maple Leafs.
That's right, the Toronto Maple Leafs, Greg.
Yes.
Oh, Lexi, amazing.
All right, you are one for two, Lexi.
I figured it out when I was like, oh, he's probably in his 60s, blah, blah, blah. And then I hear Jeff going to Toronto.
I went to bar trivia last night. Yahoo did one for folks that work in their Manhattan office, and I went to it. And it was one I had never gone to before where they give you questions, and then your time to answer the question, they play a song. And sometimes the song has a clue about the question in it. So just to hammer home the point, like the question was, on which continent did watermelons first grow? Or where was the first watermelon harvest? On which continent? And then they start playing The Rains Down in Africa as you're waiting to listen, as you're waiting to answer the question. So we are in a very giving mood for you on that question, and I think it was because of the bar trivia that I attended last night. All right, round three, you are one for two. Your categories are, as the video shows, which is questions about supplemental discipline, Puck Cinema, questions about movies that have hockey in it, and because Merrick requested it, the 1934 New York Rangers.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Seriously.
That's right.
I love watching all the player safety videos, but then I immediately forget everything they said in them, so not that one. Let's all do right. the hockey and movies.
All right, Puck Cinema is the category, hockey and movies for round three. This 2008 Kevin Smith film starring Seth Rogen and Elizabeth Banks featured a beer league team called the Monroeville Zombies, a homage to Dawn of the Dead. Name this movie.
Who was in it?
Seth Rogen, Elizabeth Banks, Kevin Smith directed it, 2008.
Is that the Someone and Someone Makes a Porn?
That is the movie. Do you remember the names of the characters from this film?
No, I never saw it. I just know. What's the movie, the Kevin Smith movie, Someone and Someone Makes a Porn?
What, you're asking me?
Zach and something. I don't know.
Oh, okay.
You've come close enough. And they did as well in that movie. Zach and Miri Make a Porno was the film that
Zach
we were looking for. But you remembered the Make a Porno part, which I think is the salient information, so we'll give it to you on that one. You are now
The hook of the title, I believe.
Right, it was. It is the most important information. Names are names, but Making a Porno, I think, is the important information conveyed in that title.
Right.
Just out of curiosity. Did she get? We give her that one, by the way. Wish.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so
yeah, she's two for three.
Two check marks. What was the 34 Rangers question? Just curious.
She'll never choose it, so I'll just ask it to you. But you'll know it, and because I tried to make it one that our listeners could get. The 1934-35 Rangers actually faced two teams from Montreal in the playoffs, ousting the Canadiens in the quarterfinals but losing to this alliterative team in the semifinals. Name the other team from Montreal in 1934. Lexi, do you know the answer?
I 100% do not know the answer.
And Merrick
does. So I will phone a friend named Jeff Merrick.
And
Maroons.
The Montreal Maroons was the team name.
Which is why it was last year when Anaheim visited Montreal, was the first time in, 60 years that a Maroon scored in Montreal.
That's right. I remember that stat. That was amazing. All right. Yeah. Round four.
Yay.
This is where we start to see some old categories reappear, but also see some new ones as well. Round four, option number one is the ECHL team names. Option number two is I Ain't Got Time to Bleed, which is Goons and Their Ice Time. And option number three is the U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame. So you've got the ECHL team names, you've got I Ain't Got Time to Bleed about Goons and Their Ice Time, and you have the U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame as the third option.
I'm equally ignorant about all three categories, so let's do the Goon Ice Time.
Goons and Their Ice Time. I will tell you that the answer to this question, does in fact involve a former Flyer, so you may remember him.
Interesting.
This former Blue Jacket Flyer led the NHL with 213 penalty minutes, playing just 627 per night in 77 games with the Vancouver Canucks this season. Name this goon.
I have no idea.
Throw one out there. Any Canuck that you can think of.
First name rhymes with the team I'm least familiar with.
All right.
So I will say...
First name rhymes with Tom.
Don't give me this one because I want to go to question five.
Okay, go to question five. Right. I don't know.
All right, so there it is. That's a loss. That we were looking for. Tom Sestito was the name that we were.
Yeah,
looking
I would
for.
Not have known that.
All right. Well, there
but
you go.
I'm sure many listeners would have known that. I would have gotten it right.
Here we go. You ready? Here we go. The big finale. Question number five. You need this one to win. You're 2-for-4 right now. Question number five. The categories are celebrating a birthday, the U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame, and Sid is not a kid because Sidney Crosby had a birthday this week. So, celebrating a birthday, U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame, Sid is not a kid.
Of course. Sid is not a kid. Let's
oh, the drama, Jeff Merrick. Jeff Merrick, oh, my. Lexi, of course, is a Penguins fan. She's chosen a Penguins question as her final question in this game. This is the sort of excitement and tension that I think the new format of Game Show Friday can bring to the table.
Yeah. Can I ask a question?
do you have the question in front of you?
I'm just going to make one up about Sidney.
Oh, are you? Because I have an actual question about Sidney. But go ahead.
Oh, okay.
I
want
to hear both of them. Can I do both of them?
Okay, when he first started in the NHL, what number did Sidney Crosby have inside his gloves?
I don't know, 87?
27. Okay, move on to yours, Greg.
Can you explain why 27? Why 27?
Daryl Sutler, 10 points in a game.
Oh, is that right?
Oh, yeah. He's got to stop that.
Sid is not a kid. The question is, and I think it's one you could get. Does Sidney Crosby have more World Junior Gold Medals, Stanley Cups, or Mark Messier Leadership Awards?
I know this. I can get this one.
World Junior Gold Medals, Stanley Cups, or Mark Messier Leadership Awards? What does he have more of?
Well, we know he only has one Stanley Cup. I don't think he has any leadership awards, so I'm going to go with gold medals.
Lexi, I have some bad news.
No. Okay, change my answer.
He has one gold medal. He has one Stanley Cup. And, of course, as one of the NHL's greatest captains, he has two Mark Messier Leadership Awards. Lexi, I assume that my inclusion of that travesty of an award, that joke out of an award, that excuse for extra marketing dollars being pumped into the National Hockey League in the pockets of that bald bastard Mark Messier, that you would understand that that was the joke answer. But I'm afraid you didn't pick up what I was putting down.
I didn't.
You have fallen.
I think my fury with the awards is kind of blocked out.
You have fallen in Game Show Friday 2.0. I'm sorry,
and
Lexi,
I had a
you
great
have
time.
Short.
Right?
The new format's amazing,
See,
isn't
Game
it?
Game Show Friday is the greatest. It's the greatest, Jeff.
I do like the new format better.
Yes.
How long
well,
did that take?
Still hate.
It took a good 15 minutes.
It's 15 minutes, eh?
But we had a lot of shits and giggles, though. We had many shits and giggles.
We did have shits and giggles. I will give you that.
Just make it multiple choice. Just make it true false.
But that's what I'm saying, though. I'm saying that there were multiple choice. There were different choices. Maybe what I need to do going forward is say that certain questions that I'm asking are multiple choice. Like, for example, like the ECHL team name question. You're crazy and intimidated by it. But that was a multiple choice question. Would you like to hear it?
Yes, absolutely,
goes.
I do.
All right. Which of these teams was never in the ECHL? That was the question. Which of these teams was never in the ECHL? The Tampa Bay Watch, the Arkansas Riverblades, the Greenville Growl, and the Indy Fuel.
I would say the Indy Fuel or the Tampa Watch.
Which one would you say?
The Indy Fuel, that sounds weird.
Well, the Indy Fuel does sound weird because they are a new team for 2014. But the Tampa Bay Watch is a fake team that never existed. You see, maybe I need to indicate
Tampa
that certain...
Oh, you said Tampa Bay Watch. I thought you said Tampa Watch. Of course it's the Tampa Bay Watch.
Either way, they don't exist. There's never been a team called Watch.
That sounds like the most amazing, like... the most amazing date confusion since someone said... Popcorn? I thought you said cop porn. Thank you.
Why does everybody, yes. all the day Game Show Friday haters are out? Listen, I have a ball doing Game Show Friday. It's one of the things I most look forward to. I don't think the format is terrible. I like the new format. I don't know.
Let me do the questions next
time. I don't
time.
Think you're right. What? You want to do the questions next time?
Yeah, let me do, okay, you did them all this time. Let me do all the questions next time.
All right.
You know what? Here's the thing we say all the time in the museum marketing world is that you cannot please everyone. And if you try to do a product that pleases everyone, you'll end up pleasing no one because it will be crap.
Let me ask you a question about art.
Yes.
Are you, stylistically, as far as genre goes, are you more in favor... Do you like painting more than sculpture or sculpture more than painting? Do you believe in art by addition or art by subtraction?
I appreciate all equally.
Very politically correct answer from someone that works in an art gallery. Very nice.
Well, I work in a museum. I do not work in a gallery.
Sir.
There is a difference.
I understand that.
There is a difference, sir.
But no, we... I mean, our museum is all dedicated to three-dimensional objects of use, useful things that are beautiful and useful. So we're kind of like the bastard children of the art world.
Are you like the punk rockers of the art world?
Ooh.
Kinda. We're more like the drama geeks of the art world. They don't really fit in anywhere. They skulk in a corner. There's not very many of them. I would say the punk rockers of the art world are like the contemporary abstract sort of, like MoMA. They're the punk rockers.
They're the punk rockers? Gotcha.
Yep.
Not for those fees.
No. Not for what?
Those fees that they charge at MoMA.
Can I ask you a question? Can I ask you another question? Can I ask you another question,
yes.
Lexi? Remember when I sent you those pictures of the chairs at Sportsnet?
Yes, you did.
Did they make it into the museum?
They made it onto a museum iPad next to the exhibition.
Oh, so but it was actually in the museum though.
Yes.
So did I get a photo credit?
No.
Oh,
well, kind of.
My one shot at actually being in a museum.
You were museum adjacent.
Not quite.
There was like, okay, so it all went on a Tumblr with all these different chair submissions and things. And I did say that this was the chair that Jeff Merrick sits in at Sportsnet, blah, blah, blah.
It's like Archie Bunker's chair in the American Museum of Natural History, where the hell it is in D.C.
And Lexi,
Jeff Daniels' chair from like that terrible show on HBO that I hate watch, Newsroom.
We had his
ACN chair that he sat in on the set. That was in the exhibition. So
there you go.
There was a celebrity behind impression in the museum.
Lexi, I'm sorry.
I wanted to sit in it. They wouldn't let me.
Bastards. I'm sorry that Game Show Friday didn't work. We did like having
it
you back
worked.
On though.
I had a great time. It's
Lexi
fine.
Had fun. She's our buddy out in San Diego. That's cool.
All right. Lexi, off we go. Thank you for joining us on the show again.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Talk soon, Lexi.
I think some of the feedback on Game Show Friday has been constructive, and I think part of the issue, and you are the one who first said it as we were closing out, is that it might go on for a bit too long. So maybe cut it down to two categories for each question. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I'm cool with that.
Give me a choice, an either or.
Yeah. Keep it stumpy,
it's trying to make them either or. It's trying to keep it's the really depressing versions of it for me were the times when we get somebody on and it's some like category that we both love, and then they don't know dick about
crickets.
It, and then
yeah,
we're just yeah, and then it's crickets. So I'm trying to not allow that to happen.
I think it's actually
you like
actually
it better.
I think it'd be actually more challenging if the people that we have on gave us the category they would like to be asked about, and then we find the most obscure stuff about it.
I'd be willing to try that.
Why don't we try that? Want to try that next week?
Next week we'll try that.
Hannah, our dear friend on Twitter, said, I am ready to tank on MVSW at Jeff Merrick's earliest convenience. She's a big Sharks fan. Could have her on to go deep on the Sharks. Man, opinion.
Yeah,
really
we'll just what we'll do is we'll put out the call on like Thursday, and then we'll get the category, and that way we can have the category at our beck and call, and we can do the questions off of that. All right,
that makes sense. That way we can wreck someone's Thursday night, so instead of going out and getting all boozed up with your pals, you got to stay home and do homework for Game Show Friday.
Yeah, the rest of these questions are pretty solid. I mean, they're all stuff that you'd know. I'm trying to think if there's anything. There's nothing here that you wouldn't have known, you personally.
That's not true.
Celebrating a birthday on August 9th is Brett Hull. Which of the following categories did Hull never lead the NHL in? Goals, points, shots, or hat tricks?
Sorry, what are those again? Goals?
Points, shots, or hat tricks. Which category did
points.
He never lead the NHL in? What?
Points. Points.
That's correct. Never had the Art Ross.
Or empty net goals.
Led in hat tricks twice.
Or empty net goals. He used to always brag about not being on the ice for empty net goals. Ah, those things are easy, empty net goals. I don't score empty net goals. Yeah, because your coach didn't want you to protect the one goal lead late in the game, Brett. That's why you weren't out there.
All right, keep the conversation about Game Show Friday going on the Twitter machines. Let us know what you think. Renee Solweo writes in, Dear Jeff and Greg, I have to object to your claim of Patrick Kane being a good improviser. He really is not. I have watched several of his performances on YouTube recently, and it should be obvious how wrong it is. Let's just look at this year's convention where he took part in the improv sketch about being a huge private dick. There were no memorable lines. Even more embarrassing, the actors didn't only have to carry the sketch, but Kaner was actively resistant to any railroading, no sense of timing, and more importantly, no sense of how plotting works, as the sketch culminated in him shooting the woman who hired him halfway through the story and walking out of the stage. Former convention sketches only seem to reinforce this. Therefore, like most other hawks who seemingly have to be prompted for selfie taking by PR people, is an awful improviser. With regards, Renee. P.S. performance was solely salvaged by glorious dick jokes. So in actual improv at the Hawks convention, Patrick Kane, terrible improviser.
Would be interesting as well, too, to, and this would be an enormous project, but to go back and look at, you know, every shift that someone like, we'll just take Mario Lemieux, for example, because it's the obvious one. Every shift that Mario Lemieux ever played to see how many times what we think is a new and unique move for Mario Lemieux he's actually done a million times before.
Right.
Like, is it really improv if you've done it 100 times before?
Well, then it becomes a bag of tricks. But, improv to me, the essential thing of improv is if you even if you have a bag of tricks, it's taking what the defense gives you and then thwarting it with some unexpected thing.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, real quick before we go, Michael Delzato to the Flyers. That's one topic of conversation we've not dealt with on the show today.
True.
Delzato to the Flyers after Teeman and goes down.
Very low risk, potentially high reward signing for the Philadelphia Flyers. I mean, this is all dovetailing with the Teeman situation. It's funny because I actually, here, a name drop. Michael was at our gym on Monday, and I talked to him briefly. I said, hey, what's going on? He said, I got a couple things. You know, a couple of teams that I'm talking to, but nothing concrete right now. And then, boom, was it one day later? It's a $1.3 million contract with the Philadelphia Flyers, who are looking for an offensive defenseman, anchor the power play kind of guy. Honestly, wish for $1.3 million. Is he going to come in and be Kimmo Tiiminen that we saw 5 years ago? No. But for $1.3 million, here's someone that now has a chance. And he's still, don't forget, he's still a young hockey player. A real chance to rehabilitate himself in the NHL. And he may be in the best shape that I've ever seen him in. He looks bigger, too.
Hey, yeah, and that's great. But he's a defensive liability trying to fill a role where a guy
but
is extraordinarily
not,
responsible
they're not,
defensively.
They're not bringing in Michael Delzato to gobble up all the defensive zone starts.
No, they're not.
They're looking for points from the point.
I think the Delzato signing tells me one thing, which is that you might have been onto something the last time we talked about the Flyers and their their fortunes this season vis-a-vis the draft lottery.
I think again, the hardest time the Flyers are going to have is on their blue line. Make no mistake about it. That's going to be an Achilles.
That was their biggest problem last year, and they didn't get any better.
Yeah,
I don't think Andrew McDonald makes them that better. So you might be onto something where someone that we don't expect is going to tumble down the standings, find themselves in the draft lottery, and then if they're lucky enough to have an owner who's in cahoots with the National Hockey League and is a media partner, and all Gary Bettman wants to see is him getting a cup before he dies, then maybe you're lucky enough to win the draft lottery. I don't know. I'm just saying.
So start fitting Connor McDavid out for orange jerseys. Connor, how do you look in orange, son? Or Jack Eichel with 5 points last night against the Finns. Dun, 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 dun.
Nikki Schutz writes in, maybe base game show Friday on topics discussed throughout the week shifts the blame to contestants. There are a number of different options that we're considering. We'll do the Merrick one next. I think that's a good idea. Allow you to pick your poison.
Pick your topic.
Pick your poison format. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, pick your topic and we'll go deep on it.
But I refuse to kill it. And if you hate Game Show Friday and you don't want it to be all squirmy and such, then you know when to log off.
You are Gary Bettman in the desert on this one. You are Gary Bettman in Phoenix.
Game Show Friday is my hill to die on.
This
all of you people out there don't want there to be.
You will not go.
I'm giving you entertainment certainty with my question format.
How much? I was talking to someone about this a while ago, actually a long time ago, about Phoenix. You brought up the point that, you know, you look at what happened in Phoenix with, you know, the way the NHL fought so hard for it. And on the one hand, yeah, listen, man, it takes a long time for hockey to take root in a non-traditional, quote-unquote, non-traditional hockey market, specifically in the South. And the other is, you know, the message to the marketplace, if you're the NHL, you don't want to walk away on municipalities that build you things like rinks.
Right.
Because you may go asking for one somewhere else.
Precisely. And that's always been in the back pocket of any of these fighting to keep a team in the market, which is that we don't want to look like we walk away from teams. That's why, you know, Bettman never says it's time to go until there is absolutely no other option available to them, like there, you know, allegedly wasn't one in Atlanta. But no, I mean, the fight for the Coyotes. The initial fight obviously was more about standing up to Ball Silly than it was anything else. And then the continued fight to keep them there, I think, is maybe 2/3 Bettman's ego in trying not to be wrong about a market, and then 1/3 loyalty to the market and the people that built the arena.
I think from a macro point of view, it's still business, because when you sell national packages, regardless of who's there, who's going, how many eyeballs you have watching or butts that are in the seats, the one thing when you're executing a national buy is which markets do you have, and Phoenix is a pretty big one. The one thing the NHL has done is check boxes on big markets.
Okay, so 2/4 Gary Bettman's ego, 1/4 making sure that they have a impressive U.S. media footprint, and 1/4 loyalty to the arena people.
Okay.
Right?
Sure.
Does that work?
Okay, sure.
Is that a good percentage? Okay. Is that a good USA Today pie chart?
There's a good pie chart right there, Wish. There you go. No. Audio pie chart.
All right, listen.
Courtesy of Greg Wyshynski.
Thank you very much. We are still in summertime blues scheduling here for the podcast. We're going to be back Wednesday. Monday, Tuesday, Jeffy's booked up.
Yeah.
So back Wednesday for some fun and merriment on the Ye Olde podcast. And with that, I am Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet. By the way, I got to start plugging this now. September 21st, if you are in this area, in Stouffville, Hockey Night in Stouffville returns again this year. And this year we've got Kyprios in, so he's going to be aboard. Number of NHL, AHL, OHL players involved. And because I've been so good the last 2 years playing in this game, Greg, guess what they did?
What did they do?
They made me the MC. I remember we were losing 5-0, and somehow I was a -6. I'm not sure how that happened, but there it was.
That's also the thing that happened when I worked at Burger King, which is that eventually they made me stop making burgers and put me on the drive-through speaker.
Yeah,
because maybe other
the phrase
yeah, leave
is,
the efficient work to the people that are efficient, and leave the, yeah. the talking and wisecracking to the talking and wisecracking guy.
The phrase is falling upwards.
Totally. By the way, keep in mind that weekend, that very weekend in September, there's a chance, we don't know for sure, but there is a chance that there may be a media event involving hockey, and specifically fantasy hockey, that myself and Merrick are taking part in.
Mine's August. Yeah. Yours is September. I'm talking about August.
Oh, I thought you said August. Oh, okay. Well, August is, go to the...
Mine's August. Yours is September.
August 21st, go to Stouffville. The next 21st, September 21st or 20th, around that time, there may be the possibility, and we'll figure it out, so don't book it yet, that there's going to be a live podcast. So we'll see how that works out. Dun, dun, dun. And we'll go from there. And won't it be exciting to do a live podcast? I don't know if we're going to have games that day. Because, you know, my dream is to do a live podcast and do Hockey Family Feud.
You want to be Monty Hall. You want to be the Monty Hall of hockey podcasts, essentially.
I will tell you that there will be some live interviews and stuff there if the thing comes to fruition, but we'll see where it is. All right, everybody. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for sticking with us through wacky summer scheduling. Back next Wednesday for Going Postal, which is, you know, a much snappier and fast-moving gimmick than Game Show Friday. So everybody will want to check it out.
At least we have answers.